So you've come here for the truth. Well, we've got the truth and nothing but the truth. Here are your hosts, Robert A. Bianchi and David J. Bruno.
Welcome to WMTR Radio, Something About the Truth, with your hosts, Bob Bianchi and Dave Bruno. It is a podcast, a radio show. It's lots of things rolled up into one. But what it really is two lawyers from New Jersey, Dave, who thankfully aren't talking about anything about the law at all, because we do that all day long. We're talking about resiliency. We're talking about life hacks. We're talking about mindset. And once again, Dave, you have brought on an awesome guest.
Yeah, welcome, Matthew Cox, another one of the TEDx speakers that we had the opportunity to meet in Utah. Matthew is a dedicated facilitator of Company Accelerator, which blends academic prowess and extensive experience to foster personal development, entrepreneurship, and positive change. He has a bachelor's degree in mass communications and a master's degree in management and public administration. He's a member of the International Coach Federation and received the 2009 Good Ethics Award. We always love good ethics here, Matthew, from the California State Senate. So congratulations. I mean, it was a pleasure. We were just doing a video in our newsletter talking about that TEDx experience, just being out there with that group of people to meet people like yourself. Being out there in the Red Rock of Snow Canyon, going to the Willy Wonka play. It was just such an exceptional experience for us, and it was a great pleasure to meet you out there. So welcome to Nothing But the Truth.
Well, thank you. Well, just to piggyback on that, that was my hometown. That's where I grew up and went to college. So the college we spoke at was my bachelor's degree. And in the studio that you guys, that was the film department that I did my film degrees, because our mass communication with an emphasis in film. So it was kind of neat to see how much it's grown since 2007. So it goes fast. We think we have time, don't we?
Well, it's funny you should mention it. I do a lot of thinking about time, and I've have some very, very deep thinkers and not enough time to discuss some of what their brilliant minds say about it. But, you are where you're at is a line that I use all the time. And it may seem like a long time or not a long time, but it's pretty exact. You are where you're supposed to be and will be where you will be. I guess it's what you do during that time that can make it seem like it's gone quick. And you've done a lot. So tell us a little bit more specifically than an antiseptic resume about what it is that you're doing.
All right. Well, I've always been a, I grew up in that little town you guys went to. It was actually Hurricane. And I was that kid that was kind of always in the wings of the classroom, looking out the window, staring. Could be like Ferdinand and the Bull, sitting in the fields, thinking. I didn't do really well in school. So it's kind of a backstory that helps you know where I'm at now. And I always knew I was going to do something to help people, because one, I got so much help when I was younger, just great mentors. And I think that's the way it was driven. If you want to align it with the universe or God, it was the reason I had to have those mentors, because later in life I was coachable, teachable. But I grew up, as you guys remember in my TED talk, I grew up with an intellectual disability. So I read and write at a fourth grade level today, even as an adult. So I have to navigate through life in that. And you have to sharpen those skills. So my first business was at 17. I got the entrepreneur bug when I started a yard care business. I started mowing lawns, bought a little truck, went around. So at the age of 17, I dropped out of school, went to homeschool, just because I had severe anxiety. I didn't want to be in school. I still played sports. I played college soccer. I played high school soccer. Did really well at sports. And so I just had this knack when I did my yard care business at 17. I mean, at a 17-year-old making $4,000 a month in 1996. So not bad for that old. I learned really quick what business was. But my dad was an entrepreneur when he was alive. He passed when I was 10. But when I was little, I remember him always doing business deals. He was always making things. And I watched him very closely. So that's kind of how I got the entrepreneur bug, and then just kind of grew from there. What got me into the field I'm in now is when I started coaching high school soccer and helping kids. Because, you know, being that kid that struggled in school, I always wanted to be that. I always had a positive outlook on life, even though it's kind of sucked at sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, flunking out of college my first freshman year, I got straight F's, couldn't really figure out how to do it. So I had to really figure out how to adapt and be resilient, because it was the biggest thing in school is you have to learn to shop your professors, right? Yeah. So I learned to go ahead and this is crazy. I just got this idea. I went and started interviewing all the professors in college. So this is jumping from high school to college. Because in high school, I was told I'd never graduate, never do anything with an intellectual disability. And luckily, I was stubborn. And so that's how I started shopping. And it really helped. So that was kind of led me up to graduating. It took me a little longer than most to get through my bachelor's degree. You know, I started one career, didn't like it, went down another. Then I got introduced to film and fell in love with film. So you can see all my film equipment behind me. So we're currently shooting documentaries right now. And it's been fun to switch my career and go into using what I did in college. But most of my career, I spent helping adolescents. I actually was in mental health. I ran facilities and hospitals. Not bad for a short bus kid that always told that I wouldn't do anything. And then later in life, I had a good exit out of that business in 2000, like 3 years ago. So it's been a journey. I think the biggest thing I can say in that short amount of time that I just shared with you, because that's a lot of years. Mm-hmm. But I think what I've learned over the years is it doesn't matter if you have a disability. I think we all have something we struggle with. Mine's just intellectual. And this is kind of for anybody. Some might be pride. Some might be something they're struggling with. It's still a disability. Because if you can't learn to collaborate and connect with others, that's going to really it's going to put a really big tax on getting things done, if that makes sense. So that's kind of a background. My first business in the mental health was a foster care business. I started that and I was helping kids. And then it led up to my second business, which was outpatient. Then I had a lot of clinics. And now what I'm currently doing is helping business scale. So I go into any type of business, doesn't matter what it is. And I help the C-suite kind of scale up and get their meetings right, their KPIs right. And that you can't teach. Even when I did my MBA, you can't teach that. Because it's something I wish the system I now know that we work with in scaling, I wish they would teach it in colleges, because they don't teach this stuff. Because when you start a business or a practice, as you guys know, they don't give you that in a box, how to run effective meetings, how to get the KPIs, how to get those quarterly priorities. And it's crazy, I'll tell you both, when I go into these teams, it's crazy to see executives that are financially illiterate when it comes to profit and loss statements. And I'm like, how did you get in that position? And I say it nicely, but you know what happens a lot in any organization is they end up needing to fill a position, so they promote somebody up, but they don't give them the tools they need. So that's kind of my path and journey. So it's been a fun journey up to now.
Wow, there's a lot to talk about with all this. Something that you had said before about collaboration, it struck me that some of the smartest people I know, it's with a lot of letters after their names, you know, because they've done big things from an educational capacity, sometimes just couldn't get out of their own way. They could not, what we used to say, play well in the sandbox. They didn't have the right mindset, and then couldn't understand why they were not moving and being promoted, because I am so-and-so and I went to such and such school and I have this degree, not realizing that it takes a lot more than a degree in order for a team to make big efforts. I think I kind of heard that in what you were discussing when you're coaching. Can you talk to me a little bit more? You yourself, for example, with the learning disabilities that you've had, are now coaching C-suite employees who I'm sure have a lot of letters after their name. Talk to me about it all.
Yeah, I coach multi-million dollar businesses, you know, CEOs, 2 million or more. And it, the funny thing about it, what happens is people think, well, what I've learned is everybody's human. It doesn't matter. I don't care what title you have. You still put your, you, we've all heard that saying, you put your pants on one leg at a time. We get up. But at the end of the day, everybody has a purpose. So when I work with these executives, the first thing you have to realize, are they coachable? Because at the end of the day, if you're not coachable, like when I was a, when I was an athlete coach, when I coached college soccer, if my people weren't coachable, we would lose games consecutively. When we started being coachable, we win. And business is no different. When you have a team that's uncoachable, and especially the CEO, if the CEO or the founder just brings me in and I have to drag them in and I have to drag them around, I fire them very quickly. I won't coach them. I don't care how much money it is or whatever, because it won't be a good ROI for both sides. So I think the biggest thing when it comes into C-suites or any type of company, I don't care if you're Elon Musk, I don't care who you are, you have to be coachable. And the teachable side of things is, you know, there's a lot of, you guys have been at many conference tables. You sit across from probably lots of leaders of different big organizations. And you'll in about 5 minutes, you can see their temperament. You can see their personality styles. And probably even as a lawyer, you know, personality styles or temperament is really important in litigation. Because if you know how, who it is or what kind of personality is, it's the same thing in coaching. If I can coach them according to their personality styles, we can get them a long ways, if that makes sense. So it's really important. I think number one is to be coachable. Number two is to be humble. I think a lot of times what we miss in the C-suites is humble leadership. Like, you got there because of your people.
Right.
Yes, your vision was really important. When my company finally got to a huge amount of money, being a short bus kid from a small city, I sat back. I think I was 45 when my wife showed me our tax returns. And I was like, what? Because I'm not a money, I don't look at what I make. It's all purpose driven for me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when I sat back at 45 and I says, whoa, because I knew when I married her, I says, hey, we were about 30 in our 30s. I says, hey, we're going to do this and this is what's going to happen. And she kind of laughed and smiled at me. And then at 45, because I told her I was going to retire at 45. And so when we sat back and when we hit that goal, it takes a humility of a leader to now say, what do we do next with the organization or company? So I don't know if that answers your question, mm-hmm. but I think it just, those are the two factors, willingness, knowledge, and skills. If you don't have that willingness, no matter who you are, you're not going to have the knowledge, or you might have the knowledge, but you're not willing to use it properly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer, perfect way to stop too, because we got to take a quick break here at WMTR Radio's Nothing But the Truth. We'll be right back.
At the Bianchi Law Group, our team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys specialize in criminal defense and domestic violence cases. When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.
Okay, welcome back to the WMTR Radio's Nothing But the Truth. Matthew, I know Dave's been, he's jotting notes down furiously. He's got a lot. You're throwing a lot of wisdom. Clear, one of the reasons we really liked you is your mindset is so similar to ours.
Yeah, sure. I remember our conversations in Utah as well about the quarterly rocks and the KPIs and the process. And I'll tell you, you made a great point. Now, this is especially true for lawyers. Lawyers, you go to law school to learn how to be a lawyer. Rules of evidence, rules of procedure, how to advocate for a client in the courtroom. Nobody tells you how to run a law firm. No way.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's a similar theme that applies widespread to real estate agents and all kinds of other professionals. I think a lot of people get good at what they're trained to do, and then they have to make income and profit from their skill set. It's one thing to collect a salary, but it's another thing to own a business. And that's really the point that I took away from our conversation in Utah as well as now. And that's why we click so much, is because we are so focused on those things to improve services, which in turn helps more people, at least at our firm.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that, because you said before that you're very purpose-driven, and that's exactly what we are. And it's nails on a chalkboard. And I don't know if this is everywhere. Maybe you can tell us your experiences. When people say, and I've heard this my entire life. My dad's a lawyer. He's 91 years old. He's a lawyer. Great lawyer. Great skills. But they say, it's not a business. It's a profession. And, you know, I used to have that mindset too. I'm purpose driven. Yes, of course. It's a profession, not a business. Until during COVID, where my epiphany happened was when a coach, and this is the value of people like you, can kind of had his arms folded, listening to the mentality of it's a profession, not a business, and said, look, let's make it as simple as possible. If you're a purpose-driven person that wants to do good for a lot of people, you can, your competitors out there marketing, your competitor who's not as good as you, who is not as capable, is getting the client that you should be having. So you can't help more people because you're not looking at it like a business. And at that moment when that was said, I was like, wow, that really makes a lot of sense, especially in a day and age when people go to Google to find their lawyer, and somebody who's just a great search engine optimization human being or knows that, but could be a horrible lawyer, is getting the client. And lots of our friends, right, Dave, are now like, what did you guys do to scale your business the way you did? Because I'm really proud, not only the fact that we scaled our business to be bigger, but we're better in our representation of these people.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing when it comes to that, like if you use Silicon Valley, for instance, the tech world, they're really good at vending tech. They get it to the point. But what tech companies will tell you, they're a bunch of green individuals, very analytical, and they don't know how to market it. They'll come in and say, okay, how do we get it to market now? Because they're in the workshop working. So the first lever in any business, you have to have a plan. You got to have that plan really dialed in where you're heading. Who value-based, you got to be a value-based company. Hire, fire, promote, do everything by your values and keep your values simple. I always say no more than four because nobody can remember anything after five. It's kind of like a goldfish. Once we get too far, you know, when you get to 10 values in a company, you're scary. So four is a good sweet number that I always coach people on. But when you have those values set and that plan ready, then you have to have your 3-year, your 2-year, your 1-year, and then your quarterly. Because a lot of times people, when they first start a business, like you say, well, it's a profession. Why work with doctors on a daily basis? That's a profession, but they're not so good at business. Yeah. Because they're really good at healing people, and lawyers are helping people know the law. And so you got to do what you're good at. What a coach does is come 30,000 feet above, and we work on the business, not in it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're not in it. You guys are in it grinding every day. So a coach can fold his arm and look back and say, but let me ask you one thing. Let's keep it simple, just like Einstein says, right? Keep it simple. Don't overthink it, but have a plan. Number two lever is know your people. You got to have a people plan because you got to know who you have, because good people come in, good people go out. You can't. And what I see a lot of companies do, and you guys might have felt this before, have you ever had a chance where you've kept somebody too long that it hurts the culture?
Of course.
Yeah. Everybody has it, but we're scared to fire. So what I always teach them is become good firers, because it's a good thing, because when you fire somebody, you give them a chance to move on. Mm-hmm. So those are two levers. There's eight levers, but in time's sake. But when we go through those levers, that's what helps a business function, having the right conversations at the right time with the leadership, if that makes sense.
It does. It does, without a doubt. And again, I could just go down the list: doctors, lawyers, dentists, real estate agents, construction companies, and workers. It's such a great conversation nowadays because, Matthew, I truly believe we are in the gold rush of technology. We are so fortunate in our lives. And I know from our prior conversations, you guys take advantage of automation and leveraging assets and resources. Talk a little bit about this era that we're in right now with AI and technology and how to really take advantage of it.
So I have a client that called me with AI. He created an AI that is a virtual secretary. And he demonstrated it for me. And I was like, holy smokes. He says, yeah, watch this. And he's a realtor. He says, hey, so-and-so, and the AI sounded like a real person. This is the reality of where we're heading. So certain jobs will be replaced by AI. But now let's think about it a little deeper. If you're not strategically thinking, if I was somebody coming into this world, I would be the one helping with the AI, because now it's going to create other jobs. So progress, everybody gets scared, but with progress, there's other jobs. So we have to alter. What the universities forget to do is adjust. It takes a little while to adjust. So this individual just taught himself how to develop it. He's a realtor by choice, and he went and taught himself, and he created a whole AI. And I think leverage, like what we do with also AI, is we can also, with our system that we use with the scaling, and so what the scaling, I'll just end on this, is that with the AI, we can then know on your KPIs where your profit is. So the AI is going to be a huge piece in it. So you got to know AI. It's not going away. It's going to be a part of your life.
You know, I just want to amplify something for our older audience and something that may resonate with you. It's the tale of my parents. And I think AI is going to be the next example of this. So my mother, who was a little bit older when email came out and computers, was very resilient. She wanted to know computers. She wanted to email, make cards, birthday cards, whatever. My father wanted, not to this day, 91, all these years later, wants nothing to do with what he calls the machine, i.e. the computer. And so he didn't get on board. And what I see is that his friends did. And his world, you can't, you know, for those on the radio, you're not going to, but if you look at the podcast, you'll see me, my hands are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. His world became smaller and smaller to, like, now he doesn't have the ability to email. He doesn't have the ability to text, no matter how much we try to teach him. There's, you said before, there's that client that's unteachable because there's no curiosity. There's no desire to learn. And it's sad. And I think AI is going to, if that's true of somebody about emails and text messages and smartphones, I can only imagine exponentially what that's going to be like with people that aren't jumping on the AI.
Well, you know, to add that real quick, AI for me as somebody with an intellectual disability, it was like me in a wheelchair getting off the wheelchair. It was just like a game changer for me. I told my brother, I says, holy smokes, I can ride anything now. And so I don't have to, because as a business, what I would do is I'd write something and I'd send it over to my brother. He would edit it. I don't have to do that now. I have ChatGP. I can put it in there. I can write things. It just opened my world up. So it's something to think about there in the business world. People that are very creative can now come up into the C-suite level and use AI and have those jobs without any fear, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it totally makes sense. And it's a good conversation to have about the growth mindset as well. You talked about the universities and the traditional education that's out there. And a lot of people come out of college or a graduate degree or a law degree, whatever, and they have a trajectory that is linear. And that is, I am a lawyer, I'll always be a lawyer. But there's so much out there that you could learn as well to supplement those skills, like we're talking about, even just business skills. Like we talked about with the quarterly goals and the business plans and things like that. In this day and age, YouTube is out there where you could just basically throw a search term into YouTube and become a quasi expert on something. And that's just another reason. It's not just AI. It's also the resources of education that are out there to supplement our educations and skill sets. Thoughts, Matthew?
Yeah, I see AI. I see all of our kids having an AI and learning. I was actually talking to an AI designer. He was working with the school districts to create an AI system. So each kid is given a ChatGP or an AI that's basically with them. So instead of fighting plagiarism, they went and said, hey, we're going to have sessions where this AI teaches. And then the teacher says, hey, what was your session like? And they can go back and look on it. That is what is going to be the future. AI is not, it's the new Google. Remember when Google came out, we were all scared. now AI, because you got AI and you got SI. Now they're worried about SI, super intelligent.
Super intelligent.
Yeah, and so they're they're really looking at this, but you have to, as a business, like, let's talk about real quick. I know we got short time, but if I put an AI secretary in place and I train her on everything my, say, my law practice does, it answers all the incoming calls. What can my other one do? They can do more work. My paralegal can focus on other things. I'm now going to be more productive, and I don't have to worry on that entry-level job. They quit because the summer's over. Then I'm hustling and trying to do it, because that AI will work 24 hours, 7 days a week. So you got to think of, how is it going to be used, and how do you use it as a company? So it's really sitting back in that plans phase and saying, strategically, how can I implement it?
All right. Well, listen, unfortunately, that's all we have. But we did take a real quick break and edit it out here, because Matthew has agreed to come back, because we want to hear a lot more about this life story, because this is exactly what we talk about. The resiliency to get past something where other people sit there and say, why me? How come? You know, I can't do it. He got past all that, retired at 45, but obviously still doing a lot of work and doing a lot of good for people. And now coaching C-suite employees. Unbelievable, Dave. This is WMTR Radio. It's Nothing But the Truth of Bob Bianchi, Dave Bruno, every Saturday at 9:30 on the radio. Dave, where can they find us on the podcast?
Sure. It's nothingbutthetruthpodcast.com. Also, we are live streaming, in addition to the radio, on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, and X. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on. Last question, I promise. Last question. Where could our audience find you?
Yeah, you can go to LinkedIn. I'm on there, Matthew Cox with MP on the end of it. And then also just Facebook, Matthew Leland Cox there. And just feel free to get a hold of me either way on those. And you can also get my book on Amazon. It's called The Courage to Learn Differently. And that kind of tells my whole life story as well.
Wow. All right. We're going to have you back on your life story on the second episode. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys.
We're the Bianchi Law Group, a team of former prosecutors and certified criminal trial attorneys.
But here's the thing. He put himself in a box when he said my
relied on by CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Law and Crime, and news leaders across the country for our criminal defense expertise.
To get a search warrant, you have to have probable cause that a crime's been committed and there's evidence in a particular place.
When you need a law firm with courage, compassion, and the commitment to fight for you, call the Bianchi Law Group today.